The fourth parak is a brief parak, so we'll see if maybe we do a little bit more, or we just finish the parak. We'll see what the timing is in terms of that. But what we establish so far in the first three parakim is that the new king is now Shlomo HaMelech, and Shlomo takes over for his father, for David. There was some rebellion and some difficulty at the end of David HaMelech's life with Adoniyahu trying to become the king, and eventually David ensures that Shlomo is going to be the successor to the throne. And as such, he's given several missions by his fathers of some unfinished business that he needs to take care of. And using his wisdom, he takes care of that. And then he works towards consolidating his mafos. I think we spoke last time about the fact that he married the daughter of Paro. She converted. But again, it was a way of making sure that his connections not just within the machos, not just within his own kingdom, were solid, but that they were going to be solid with the neighboring towns as well. He saw everything that he did was found favor in the eyes of Hashem, and Hashem offered him whatever blessings he wanted. You know, we think it's kind of like the genie in the bottle. Whatever your wish is, I will provide for you. And that was where he wished for Chachma. And because he could have asked for anything in this world, riches and the like, and he chose to instead ask for Chachma, Hashem ended up granting him Chachma to be the wisest of all people. And at the same time, he gave him also tremendous kavod and tremendous wealth. And the last story at the end of Perek Gimel told us over an example of his Chachma with the two women who came with the baby that died, each claiming that it was a baby, and again, a fairly well-known episode, and Shlomo says to cut the baby in half and use that as a ploy in order that to elicit the rachamim, in order to elicit the mercy of the real mother, who would rather have somebody else take her baby and the baby be alive than to have the baby killed. And what the Navi finished off with was that this was an episode which is included because it showed everybody the wisdom of Shlomo. And the more that it showed everybody the wisdom of Shlomo, then his greatness as being the Melech became well-known and really solidified his machos in a way that had not previously been experienced. And that brings us to the beginning of Perek Dal, Pasuk Aleph, Vayehi HaMelech Shlomo Melech al Kol Yisrael. The Shlomo HaMelech is the king over all of the Jewish people. Now, that's no small thing. It's no small thing to be the king over all of the Jewish people because we're a complicated people. And it's to be the king over all of the Jewish people is not simple at all. And it was not something that Shaul had. Shaul began with people belittling him, as we learned at the beginning of Shmuel Aleph. David had trouble also. He was only the Melech over Yehuda for a while until he was able to solidify his kingship and become the Melech over everybody. And now there was something different about Shlomo. Something different about Shlomo that he was able, again, to solidify and to make himself the Melech that everybody accepted. I think the Mitzudah even comments that it wasn't the Mitzudah, maybe it was the Radak. Yeah, the Radak says, "Lo haya adam mefakbek mechusel kevin sherabu chachmas elokim bekirbo." There wasn't even anybody who had a thought of rebellion. That's quite a level. Not just that nobody rebelled against Shlomo, but nobody had any questions about his machus. And that's where the Navi continues, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Beis. Ve'ela hasarim asher lo. And these were the officers who were there for Shlomo. Azariah ben Tzadok HaKohen, Azariah the son of Tzadok HaKohen, Elichoref v'Achia b'nei Shisha Sofrim, he had these people who acted as scribes, Yehoshaphat ben Achilud HaMazgir, he had a secretary, so he wrote down the history, u'b'nayahu ben Yehoyada al HaTzava, u'b'nayahu ben Yehoyada was the general of the army, v'Tzadok v'Avyasar HaKohanim, and he had Tzadok and Avyasar who were the Kohanim. Azariah ben Nasan al Hanitzavim, he was in charge of the different commissioners. Vizavud ben Nasan Kohen Rei HaMelech was a minister and advisor to the king. Vachishar Labayas, there was Achishar who ran the house. Vadoniram ben Avda Alamas, there was somebody who was in charge of the tax collecting. What are all these psukim coming to show us. Okay, it's a list of people. It's a list of jobs. But fundamentally, what the Navi is trying to tell us was that Shlomo had a different strategy. Shlomo realized that if he's going to succeed as not just being a king, but being a spiritual leader for the Jewish people, he can't be fully engaged in government. If he's engaged in every aspect of the government, then Torah matzehei aleha. What's going to be with learning Torah? What's going to be with his chachma? And therefore, he realized that he wanted to delegate. He wanted to make sure that there were going to be people who were going to be in charge. Again, ultimate authority was going to stay with Shlomo HaMelech. But he was going to have people on a day-to-day basis would take care of different aspects. They would, you know, consult back with him. But that way, he still had the ability to engage in Talmud Torah and his relationship with Hashem. Now, whenever you're going to appoint people and you have a nation, so you potentially are going to have trouble with why is this one chosen and this one, and we have different shvatim. So he had a plan. And that is what the next pasuk in Perek Dalet, pasuk Zayin, the Navi tells us. V'lishlomo shnei masar nitzavim al kol Yisrael. There were 12 commissioners over all of Yisrael. Why 12 commissioners over all of Yisrael? Because there are 12 shvatim. And he made sure that whoever these regional people were who are going to be spread about, who are going to take a prominent role in the kingdom, that there would be one from every shevet. And each of them would take care of the king and I guess would come to Yerushalayim in order to care for the king and take care of the needs of the kingdom for a month at a time. So it wasn't like they just had, you know, at a distance had a relationship with Shlomo, but it was something which they brought back and they had the opportunity to engage with him as well. Ve'elish Mosam, and now it lists off their names. Ben Chur Bahar Ephraim, Ben Chur was in the mountains of Ephraim, Ben Deker B'makatsu B'shalabim, U'be'shemesh Ve'elon B'ishchanan, Ben Chesed Ba'arubos, again, just the son of Deker was in this place called Makatz, and in Shalavim, he was in Beit Shemesh, Ben Chesed was in Arubos, Lo Suchev V'chol Aretz Chefer. And he was in charge of the Eretz of Chefer. Ben Avinadab, Kol Nafas Doar, Tafas Bas Shlomo, Hai Salo Lisha. Okay, he mentions that he was married to a daughter of Shlomo. I guess that always works well in his favor as well. Ba'ana ben Achilud, Ta'anach, Megiddo, B'chol Beishan, Asher Eitzel, Tzarsana, Mitachas L'Israel, Mibeishan, Aravel, Mecholo, Ad Me'ever, Liyak Me'am. And the area that he was in charge of for Bina'o, the son of Achilud, was again all of the Beit Sha'an area, which again the Navi is just giving us the geographical locations. Pasuk Yud Gimel Ben Geber Ben Amos Gilad Lo Chavos Yair Ben Menasher Sherba Gilad. He was in charge of the Gilad area. Lo Chevel Argova Sherba Bashan Shishim Remilos. He was in charge of 60 great cities. Choma Uberiach Nechoshes. They were walled and had bars. They were again well fortified. Achinadab ben Ido Machanaima, Achimas ben Aftali, Gamhu lakach et bas vas Shlomo Lisha. Okay, he also married a princess. Ba'ana ben Chushoi, Ba'ana the son of Chushoi, Ba'asher Ba'alos, Yoshevat ben Peruach B'Yisachar. Again, each of them in a specific area. Shim'i ben Elah ben Yamin, Geber ben Uri Beretz Gilad, Eretz Sichon, Melech Ari, Ve'og Melech HaBashan, Tzivachar HaShev Aretz. Again, more regions, and who was in charge? Yehudah v'Yisrael, Kachol Asher Aliyam, and there were so many of the Jews, they were many as the sand of the sea, Larov. Ochlim v'Shosim u'Smeichim, and everybody was happy. Wow, it's like a fairy tale, right? Everything was good. We really have a perek in Navi where everything just sounds good. Let's start the next perek as well again, which has a little bit, I don't know if we'll finish the next perek, but at least we'll get started, because the next perek, again, in terms of the overall kingdom of Shlomo and how it's going to develop in terms of his primary role, is going to become a little bit clearer. So, Perek Hei Pasuk Aleph. Ushlomo haya moshel b'chol hamamlachos. He was the ruler of all the kingdoms, mina nahar eretz plishtim v'ad givul mitzrayim. From the land of the Plishtim, the Euphrates River, until the border of Mitzrayim, magishim minchav avdim eshlomo koy mechayav. They would bring tributes and they would serve Shlomo all the days of his life. Meaning what? He was not just a monarch. He was not just a king over the Jewish people, but he was basically the monarch and the most powerful figure in the world. And it extended way beyond Eretz Yisrael. He did not manage the affairs of all those countries, but all of the surrounding countries would bring gifts, and they would and had tremendous respect for Shlomo HaMelech for all the days of his life. And it describes in the next psukim that his malchus grew so great that the royal expenses also increased as well. Vahi lechem Shlomo liyom echad, the amount of food that was consumed, again, not literally by Shlomo, but I would say at the house of Shlomo. Again, the more prominent you are, so the more dignitaries that are coming from within the country, from other countries. So many people are coming to the palace of Shlomo HaMelech. The amount that was used was Shloshim Kor Solas v'shishim Kor Kemach. Okay, again, I don't know exactly how we convert the shear of a kor, but they would use 30 kor of fine flour and 60 kor of regular flour. How much can that produce? We'll see in a moment how much bread there was coming off of his table, but it was an awful lot of food. In addition to all of that, Asara bakar b'riyim v'esrim bakar ri'i u'mei atzon levad me'ay lutziv yachmur v'arburim avusim. They would be 10 fattened oxen, 20 regular oxen, 100 sheep and goats, in addition to any gazelle and deer and fowl that was being consumed. It was a lot of food. And that's why one of the descriptions that Chazal sometimes use for a large meal is Kisudas Shlomo HaMelech B'Shaito, like the meal of Shlomo in his heyday. Why? Because again, there were people coming from all over, and they would be eating at the table of Shlomo. The Abar Ben El estimates that again, I don't know exactly how he makes the calculations, but that there was enough food from everything that's described here to feed 60,000 people every day. That is quite a large meal. Again, they weren't necessarily all sitting at a table in the palace, but he was providing for a very large number of people. Why was it so much love? Because he ruled over such a large area that, again, there were people coming to Shlomo from the equivalent of all over the world. Again, if they weren't in the immediate region, it wasn't going to be easy for them to go back and forth. But certainly, the surrounding areas within the Mediterranean, the Middle East region, were coming to Shlomo. Vayeshev Yehuda v'Yisrael avetach ish tachas kafno v'tachas te'inasom midan v'al bershava kol yemei Shlomo. And everybody sat securely, right? Each man under his grapes and under his fig tree, all the way from Dan down to Beersheba, all the time of Shlomo. And what this really is telling us is that Shlomo obviously has a different task. Sometimes the job of the king is going to be to fight. It's going to be to fight wars. It's going to see what else is going on in the world. But Shlomo didn't have that challenge. Shlomo didn't have to be this general extraordinaire. And as such, he had a different task in front of him. And the Navi is shortly going to explain what Shlomo realized his responsibility is right now. Pasuk Vav. Vayihilu Shlomo, 40,000 urvos susim l'merkavo. He had 40,000 stalls for his horses. Ushnei masar elef parashim, and 12,000 for his horses. Again, the horses were used for his chariots. And 12,000 horsemen who would ride it, right? When you attach the horses to the chariot, it doesn't need to be one-to-one because they're sitting on the chariot. You can have multiple horses. You don't need to have a horseman for every horse. Lo yadu davar. And again, as we said earlier, the different regional directors or commissioners, they would come, each one for 1 month a year, and they would take care and manage and provide whatever was necessary for Shlomo. Nothing was ever missing. And they would also make sure that, again, these horses, when there was not room for 40,000 stallion horses and stalls in Yerushalayim. Right? Real estate's very expensive. You can't give up that much space just for the horses. So they were spread throughout the country. But if they're spread throughout the country, you have to make sure that there are going to be people charged with feeding them and making sure they're taken care of and getting their shots and getting their vitamins and whatever else you have to do for your horses. So he made sure that, again, these commissioners who were in charge, each one for 1 month, this was among their responsibilities. Pasuk Tes. Vayitein Elokim Chachma l'Shlomo usfuno harbe maod. And again, the Navi tells us about the greatness of the wisdom of Shlomo. Hashem gifted Shlomo with tremendous wisdom and understanding. Virochav lev, and a certain breadth of his heart, of his mind, kachol asher osfas hayom, his mind was so expansive, it was like the sand of the sea. Vatirev chachma Shlomo mechachmas kol bnei kedem umikol chachmas mitzrayim. His scope of his knowledge was greater than all of the people in the east and the people in Mitzrayim. What does that mean? Presumably what it means is that different areas had different regions had different areas of expertise. So whether it was, Eastern something or other, or Egyptian, whatever the Khartoumim used to do or the like, Shlomo had all of that wisdom. There was no wisdom that was lacking. Vayechgami kol ha'adam. He was the wisest of all people, and he gives us examples of people that were considered wise at the time. Me'isan Azrachi, Veheman, Mechalko, V'dardar, B'nei Machol. There were these certain people, the sons of Machol, who were considered to be the geniuses, the Albert Einsteins, as it were, of the time. And Shlomo far exceeded their intelligence and their wisdom. Vayehi shmo b'chol ha'goyim saviv. So why is it mentioning it again? It's mentioning it because it wasn't just important, because this was a gift that he had. But it became a defining factor that all the nations throughout the world, they knew of the wisdom of Shlomo. Vaydaber shloshes alofim mashal. He had 3,000 proverbs that he came up with. Vayhi shiro chamisha v'elef. And he wrote songs, 1,005 songs. Whether, again, we don't, certainly do not have all of the chachma of Shlomo anymore. Whatever chachma we do have from Shlomo is more or less incorporated in Koheles and Mishlei, and the Shira maybe is included in Shira Shirim, which also came from Shlomo. But again, a lot of this does not exist anymore. But it was, again, just this knowledge that constantly emerged from Shlomo, and entire world saw. Vayidaber al ha'itzim, he could speak about trees. Min ha'erez asher balvanon v'ad ha'izov, asher yotzei bakir. He understood, not that he was going to talk to the trees, right? The trees don't talk, but he was able to understand that this tree can be used for building, and this tree can be used for that, and this one needs this type of fertilizer and this amount of water. Again, it's a chachma. Vayidaber la behema v'ala of v'ala remes v'ala dogim, and he spoke again. The simple pshat is that he understood what the animals needed. There again, there are chazals that seem to talk about there's some sort of way to communicate and understand the language of the animals. And again, maybe that's included in what it's saying here as well. If there is such a chachma, then Shlomo had it. There was no chachma that he was lacking. And then it's fascinating. Pasuk Yedal, the Navi tells us, Vayavo mikol ha'amim lishmoa es chachma Shlomo. The leaders of all of the nations throughout the world would come to hear Shir from Shlomo. They wanted to hear Shlomo's wisdom. The kings of the different places that heard of his wisdom. And then they would come back and then they would share. And the greatness of the Malchus of Hashem and the Malchus of Shlomo was something that was known in the entire world. Okay. So what happens now? In Pasuk Tesvav, Vayishlach Hiram Melech Tzora, El Avadav El Shlomo, Ki shamak yosoma shkolim elav tachas avihu, ki ohev vayach Hiram leDavid kol hayamim. So Hiram was the king of Tyre, and he was an old friend of David. They got along very well, right? He built a palace for him at one point. They got along very well. And he heard that this son, Shlomo, took over for his father. And it stood out to him, because if we remember, Shlomo was not necessarily the oldest of the children of the king. He was the one who was selected. He was the oldest child of his mother, but he was the one who was selected by David to take over. And Hiram understood there must be something special about Shlomo. And he sent to him, inquiring and asking of him, you know, who introducing himself. And he wanted to understand who this person was and create a relationship with him. Vayishlach Shlomo al Hiram lemor. And Shlomo sends a message to Hiram saying, and he has to be very careful how he phrases this. Shlomo knows that the major failure of David's life, and really what bothered him until the end, was that he was not able to build the Beis HaMikdash. It was his dream. It was all he wanted to do. And Hashem told him that you are not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Shlomo does not want to tell Hiram, you know, that Hashem said, you're not going to build the Beis HaMikdash. It would be disrespectful. So he sends a very nuanced message. And he says to him, Ata yadata es David avi. You know that David, my father, he wasn't able to build the Beis HaMikdash because he was constantly engaged with enemies. He had to fight for the protection of the land and the people. That was his number one responsibility. Once things would be calm, the security situation would be okay, then he could build the Beis HaMikdash, but it didn't happen in his life. And now they are under... they were under, again, it's a Korean Ksiv, under his control and now under mine. And now Hashem has blessed me that everything is calm around me. Ain Satan v'ain Pegara, nobody's causing any trouble, there are no enemies. We're living in a time of peace. I now want to build the Beis HaMikdash. And that was the message. Again, he's telling this was a message that my father got. You had a relationship with my father. My father got the message from Hashem. You're busy fighting the wars. Your son is going to build the Beis HaMikdash. And now he asks him for a favor. And now, Save, please command. I would like you to go and command the people, your servants, to cut down cedar from Lebanon. I'll send my servants together. I'll pay them. You tell me what the rate is. I'm not asking you to fund this, but I'm asking you to take care of this. The people of Sidon, they are the best wood choppers. And this is the best wood. This is the wood. If I want to make a perfect Beis HaMikdash for Hashem, this is what we need. Hiram was thrilled. He was happy that he asked him. He was happy that this was the king. He was happy that he's continuing the legacy of his friend of David. I'm so happy that my friend David had such a son, so smart, and that he's taken over. So Hiram sends to Shlomo saying, "Shamati es asher shalach lelai. I got your message. And I will send you the cedar wood and also cypress wood." Now, he didn't ask for the cypress wood. Seems to be that he's, you know, when you're being generous, you give even more than what you're being asked for. Hiram wanted to show Shlomo, I'm so appreciative of the opportunity. I'm going to send you even more. My servants will take them from Lebanon to the sea. And I am going to, they're basically going to float them down from Lebanon. They're going to take the barge logs, tie them together, make a little raft out of them, guide it down to wherever the nearest port is close to Yerushalayim. Then they will help your servants, dismantle them. And then you'll send the horses and your servants, and you'll carry them to Yerushalayim, right? Seems like a perfect plan. What did he ask for in return? And I'm asking in return that you give bread for my household. Now it's a machlokas in the first one, what exactly he was asking for. It would have been clear that if he was asking for just for the workers. It sounds like he's asking, no. Everybody knows that your house is very well fed. That's what I want. I want to have the experience in my royal household of what you have. So what happened? Pasuk Chav Dalet. Vayihi Rom nosim lishlamo atzei razim atzei brashim kochav. So he gave all the wood he could ask for. Ushlamo nasal nechiram esrim elef kor chitim makolas leveisov esrim kor shemen kosis. He would give tremendous amounts of flour each year. And what did he do? He added oil. Chiram didn't ask for oil, right? He asked for the basic necessities, but he added more. Again, there was this very special relationship that existed between them. And Hashem gave wisdom to Shlomo Gasher Dibirlo. And they made a covenant between them. He was actually living at peace. It's so hard to imagine after all the stories in the previous Nevi'im. Vayal amelch shlo mas mikol Yisrael, vayhi amas shloshim elef ish. He imposed a levy on the Jewish people, and he needed 30,000 men, right? He had a serious job that had to be done right now. Vayishlachim levanona. He sent them to Lebanon. Aseres alafim machodesh chayfos, 10,000 each month, and they would return back. Chodesh yubal vanon. So they would be home for 2 months, and then they would go for a month to help with the trees. And Adoniram was in charge of the tax. He had 70,000 who carried the burdens. He had 80,000 who would hew the rocks from different mountains. And again, what the Navi is highlighting is now he was in full mode, and now my job, my task, is to build the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built with the greatest quality products that existed. And this was all levad misarei misarei hanitzavim lishlamo asher lamlacha shloshes alfim shlosh meos harodim ba'amosim ba'melacha. Right, all this was addition to Shlomo's 3,300 officers who were in charge of the project. I guess the general contractors. I don't know how you have 3,300 contractors all getting along. But I guess there's different aspects of the project. And they told the people what to do. You need people to oversee it. Vayitzav HaMelech, just finished up the parak, last two psukim. Vayitzav HaMelech, vayasiu avanim gadlos, avanim ekros, yaseir habayis, avnei gazis. And he commanded to get the big stones and the most precious of stones that we hewn out. Vayivsulu bonei shlomo bonei chirom, vayagivlim, vayachinu vayitzim, avanim nos habayis. And together, Shlomo's builders and Chiram's builders and everybody else that they hired carved out the stones. They prepared the wood in order to be able to build the Beis HaMikdash. And Mirtz Hashem, next time, we'll hear more about the actual construction of the Beis HaMikdash and how Shlomo HaMelech did it.